Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Insight into Healing. I am Alexa Servo Didio, and I am your host. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight, and thank you so much for sending in your questions each week to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Well, tonight I have a returning guest, Bella Wolf. She's been on my show, The Alexa Show, and now returning to Insight into Healing. She's a much-awarded screenwriter and this year producer of a musical documentary named Honeymoon USA, also winning everywhere. She has been holding on to two contracts from two literary agents but can't bring herself to sign either as she's totally overwhelmed this year while working a normal 9-to-5 job, which keeps her grounded while paying the bills. She holds several New York State licenses in the financial industry, and Bella would like to hide most of the days. Well, Bella, I'm happy you're not hiding right now and you're coming onto the Insight into Healing. I'd love to have you back on. I've been following you through the years, and it's just so amazing to have you back on. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me again. I very much enjoyed your show the last time, and you asked me a question, funny enough, all the interviews I've done, that nobody else asked me. And that really kind of stunned me a bit. So I do need some insight into healing. I've been through a lot this year. It's all good, but it's been emotionally exhausting.
Yes, yes, I could imagine. So remind us, what is that question I asked you?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask me that, and I have to go through I have to go through our last show. I don't remember exactly. It was a very insightful question that everybody who interviewed me just kind of skipped right over.
Thank you.
I was so surprised. When you asked him, I was impressed and surprised. You know, I do want to go back and see what that was.
Yes. Well,
you do a great interview, you know.
Thank you. You were on our shows earlier about your book, your screenplay now, She Was Left Alone, all about your daughter that you adopted from Siberia. Could you give us a brief overview of what that story was about, just so my new listeners and listeners to refresh their memory?
Oh, sure. I had walked on a local beach. I'm on Long Island, and there were 100 kids running around. I saw a little girl on her own in the sand playing with her, you know, little stick. And I spoke to her. She was going to be a prospective adoptive mother. And this mother was having a lot of trouble. She said my daughter was having tantrums. And she took no effort to learn the language, which was bad. You have a little Russian girl in your house. You should learn some. You really should. So she started bringing her to my house every day to swim in the pool with my toddler. And the plan was for me to get attached, which worked perfectly because I did. And she told me the week before they were sent back to Russia, because you have to adopt children on Russian ice. So she said, I'm going to drop the adoption. And I said, how could you? Like, how could you? She said, I'm not getting any information of where she is, the name of the orphanage. I said, well, you're a reporter for 60 Minutes. If you can't get information, how am I supposed to get it? I said, but one of us has to get her. She's sick, and you didn't take her to the doctor. Well, you know, I didn't know exactly what was wrong. Well, that's what doctors are for, to find out. But clearly my daughter was sick. So it ended up, she canceled the adoption. I went and picked it up. They were in Arizona. Gave them $40,000. I found a Russian woman to teach me my seventh language at an older age. And I knew I was going to need it for court speeches, just to get around, basically, and not stick out as an American, you know, so much over there. I just knew I was going to have problems. And when I landed four flights out of Moscow, in the North Pole, I was told to turn around and go home. And that's where my story kind of starts, because it took weeks of begging and pleading. I had to arrange an adoption in this little enclave. I had to fly in a judge and two prosecutors. It was extremely expensive and risky proposition, because everybody wanted me gone. And basically they looked at me like I was a baby trafficker coming in to take one of their orphans. My daughter was abandoned, not attached to an orphanage, and her Conti tribe, their nomadic reindeer herders, they moved on without her. So she had nobody to sign off on her, and that was a big problem. The rest of the problem was getting her an exit visa out of Siberia, which nobody ever does, and I was told that was never going to happen. So it was certainly exercise in tenacity, frustration, and more tenacity, but I couldn't leave, because where would I leave her? There was no place to leave her. So I had to keep going with her until I found, weeks later, I was going from police station to police station, and I found a policewoman with some urging to sign off on her exit visa to get her out, and had to get back to Moscow. So that was the story that I put into a book format. A PR woman read it. She said, you should screenplay it and send it to film festivals. And I said, I'm really like nobody, and I never wrote a screenplay before. And she said, just do it. And she was right. I got my first win about 2 weeks later.
Wow. And I've been following you on social media, and there's been about another 30-something wins since that first win. I mean, this, she's
left alone.
It's just a hit. I mean, and why wouldn't it be? I mean, a story of a mother's love, resilience, and what a mother does for her child. It just fights for her and does not let that child go. It really speaks to so many people on so many different levels.
Yeah, it was really my obsession, and I had to get her out. And, you know, as I spoke to you privately, I have my own abuse issues from when I was a kid. So maybe that's what resonated so loudly with me and my inner soul, you know, to get her and get her out. Because, you know, they threatened to put me in the gulag every day. I was not supposed to be bribing public officials, but I had no other choice. And it was pretty hairy. And I was freezing and hungry. So there was no place to put me on the weekends when the police stations closed from Friday to Monday. It was really tough. So, yes, when people read the story, they go, oh, my God, this horrible award. So this year, yes, it's winning. And I submitted it again this year, Revamped with Suze Carr. Because my nephew married a girl, and she turned out to be a pretty fair filmmaker. And she did a honeymoon film, and I decided to revamp that and produce it. And I put that out there. I was hoping to get maybe one award for that, two awards to give them for their wedding present. And nobody was more surprised than I was. You know, now I have, what, about 28 for that musical doc? Really
fun. And what is that about?
It's okay. During COVID, I went to their wedding in France, and they were limited as to how many people they could have. The bride's father is mayor of a small town, not too far out of Paris. And, you know, COVID pretty much locked everything up. Mm-hmm. And when they got to California, they broke free, masks came off. They were allowed to roam around with people and a population, and they had such a good time. And she started sending back little vignettes, and she put music over them. And I said, you know, she's quite talented. I'm going to produce this and get them a few, you know, awards for their musical documentary. And I never thought there were going to be 28 of them. But yeah, everybody loves that little film. I think why it did so well during COVID, everybody's movies were very depressing, very down. And this is happy, free, fun. And I think it's that vibe of happiness. Yeah, and freedom as they're driving around with the top down in Vegas and on the Pacific coast. People really got into that, and, yeah, more awards came in. So I told Sue's Carr, why don't I submit our script? I'm winning everywhere, so it'll pick up that winning streak, and it did. So that's why I have more awards for the script again. It's really funny. It is really
funny. And I love your story. It's your story of triumph, but also of passion.
Oh, yeah.
Because who knew you were going to be writing this book, this screenplay? And now with all these awards, it goes to show no matter who you are, no matter what, you know, age you think you are, no matter what talent you think you have or not, to go for your dream. When something is a passion and it comes from your heart and it's something that drives you, you can always excel at it.
Yeah, and that happens to be really true with this story. The first time around, I got a call from the London Film Festival, and, oh, I wanted it in there, obviously. And the woman said, we had bigger screenwriters, you know, more famous and well-known, and I wanted to put you in there at least for a nomination, but we didn't have the room. But I wanted to say I read your story, and I can't get over it or forget it. And I thought that was really nice of her to do. She didn't have to call me to say that.
Yeah. And you know, how many people actually say that? So obviously your work is so memorable and has an impact. And I think that's what people want these days. You know, I had another guest on the other week that's going to be coming up soon, Michael Savage, and he was on General Hospital, and now he's written films and things like that. And we were talking about how important it is to have films now that have meaning, that have something that people can relate to, not all this like blow them up, shoot them up special effects.
Yeah.
People want really the truth and vulnerability and real life things that they can find human compassion and empathy.
Yeah, and as I told you, that's extremely true, especially after COVID. People want feelings, humanity, and something that they can, like, read and get into and think about, you know, like you said, not just horror this, horror films are big because they're cheap to make, you know. And I always did want to publish the book, and I'm sitting on two contracts from two literary agents. One is a big children's lit agent. It's just that I read the contract, and I work 9 to 5, and I really enjoy what I do. I sell insurances and securities, and I really like what I do, and I love my job. And I thought, there's no way my boss is going to let me run around the country doing book signings. And I haven't signed either contract. I'm just looking at them, and I can't bring myself to do it. I just don't know why.
Does your boss have any idea about the book?
He knows I'm a writer, and he knows that I've won a lot of awards. I play it down because I don't want him to think that the screenwriting and the awards from the musical, too, were going to overtake my position in his company. Because, you know, it's a serious job where I get paid for my languages and all my licenses, and, you know, I would never want to give it up. You know, book sales, Sue's Carr told me, well, you know, unless they're really going to do a giant campaign, how many books are you possibly going to sell? And I thought, well, probably not as much as my salary, which is why I haven't signed either contract.
You never know. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I think your story needs to be told, and I think the book signing and getting the book out there, getting the screenplay, everything, is so important. I think, you know, when you can touch other people's lives, it'll be interesting,
yeah,
too, if you ever sat down with your boss and let him read it and then see what he has to say or she has to say about it.
You know, I offered to let him read it because I thought, not even read the book, Ebony Williams did a nice review of the book. She read the book, and I think she, in two pages, got my story down pretty nicely and clearly. So Ebony Williams did a good job. So I was going, I did ask him, can I send you, I'll email you my story just so you know what I'm writing about and what I'm, doing on the side. But he was not interested. He's only interested in my sales and his clients. That's his big interest. So
yes.
I offered, he didn't have much interest. But I will tell you, because I think I did tell you, I have two directors with small production companies that offered to do the film. But I'm driven by the percentage of what we would make. And Suze Carr's been in the business many years, and she said screenwriters only get up front 3-5% of what the budget is. And I said, okay, so no budget, no money up front, and we both have the same kind of goals in that area. So I put them both on the side. I would love to have the screenplay options, but again, like the first time, buy a bigger Prodco.
Yes, and I believe it'll happen. I mean, I think give yourself some time. With the writer's strike, and now there's the SAG has agreed to strike too, so might be the timing after this. Will be your time, because your story is an incredible story, and you're an incredible person to be sharing with it and sharing us with this story, because it's not easy.
No, it is not easy, and my travails in the North Pole were horrific, and I was just kept in places where I was like hidden on the weekends, in charge of these small enclaves along the pipelines. The women really run these towns. Men may run the pipelines, but the women in Siberia, they run the children, the towns, everything. And they were hiding me. So I had no food or water on the weekends. My guide took my daughter on the weekends, probably to some place where they could eat and sleep comfortably. But I was always left in a place alone. So it was hard. It was depressing. I went through a lot, but like I said, I was there. How could I leave her? And where would I leave her? There was no place to leave her. And I think that's what got me the exit visa, aside from some money I put on this woman's lap. I said, I was so at the end of my rope. I said, my daughter needs medical attention or she's going to die. I will leave her here with you so you can bury her here somewhere in the ice. Wherever there's, I haven't seen a cemetery for miles, but it will be up to you to bury her. Or you can let her come home with me where doctors are waiting in hospitals. And she looked at me so horrified when I said that. And I made sure my guide didn't speak English to me for the whole time we were there. I did not want to be pinned as an American, because we are not well liked in many places in northern Siberia. So, it was rough. But when I got her home, everybody was really surprised.
What was that feeling like when you got her off the plane and you stepped foot in the USA?
When I got into the American Embassy, was my last stop to stamp her passport and give me an American paper for it, and one of the gentlemen pulled me into his office, and they were waiting for me. As it turns out, I was being followed all around Siberia. Nobody helped me, but apparently people in both countries knew where I was and what I was trying to do, and he asked me, what the heck was I doing, and why, and I explained why, and it shouldn't have to have been explained. It's clear, if you want to save a child's life, you just do what you have to do to do it. And he gave me a giant package to bring back to JFK Customs. And I said, I don't want to carry that. I've been carrying heavy things all over the North Pole. Give it to someone outside. There's 200 people out there. And he refused. So that when I landed, my first thing was I dumped this package on the man at Customs. And I said, I want to see my baby and my husband. I have to get out of here. I was at the end of my rope, and writing the book was so cathartic. I cried all the way through it. I cried all the way through it.
I could imagine.
So, landing, relieved, so anxious to see my son. My little boy hadn't seen his mother in weeks, you know. They opened the gas line on me at one area, and I was alone in a dwelling, and my heart couldn't take that pungent smell of gas, and there was no escaping it. There was, like, no door for me to close, no air for me to breathe, and I thought, oh, God, here's where I die. And the body can take so much, and, I was very sick after that one weekend, but I had to keep going because I had to get the exit visa.
Yes, yes. What was ever in that package?
You know, it's funny that you asked, because I told that gentleman at the embassy, don't give it to me. I'm a nosy woman. I'm going to open it. I'm going to call the New York Times and tell everybody everything I saw in it. Don't give me that. I'm way too nosy. But he wasn't buying it. And he said, no, you're going to carry it. You're going to bring it to JFK and give it to U.S. Customs. That was my last chore. You know, but when I saw my baby, like, I just lost it. When I finally saw my baby.
Yes, yes. How is she now, and how old is she?
Oh, my God. My daughter, she just graduated college. She's a spoiled American. She tortures her father, and she's feisty as all heck, you know. But yeah, that's who she is, and I'm happy she's alive. She can, I used to tell people she's going to be spoiled. She's going to be spoiled in New York, where we at least can keep her alive. Yeah, yes. I really didn't care about the spoiled issue so much. I was so happy to have her home. She had nothing. She had the clothes on her back and nothing else, not a relative I could ever locate. And that was my fear as well. I think that was your question, actually. That was your question. Nobody asked me. What are you going to say if she tells you when she's grown up, I want to go back and try to find my mother? And I was technically her third mother at that point, you know. And luckily, Alexa, that question has never come up, and she has never asked, because I wouldn't know where to start. They're nomadic, and as you know, Siberia is half the planet. I wouldn't know where to start. So it would never happen that we could find her birth mother.
Now, because it's not like there's social media or there's tracking or there's anything like that, that as there is in this day and age. And, you know,
no, but you want to hear something funny? There was a woman, her name was Karina, and she was working at the homeless shelter where I located my daughter after they told me to go home, that she had gone with her nomadic tribe and moved on. Well, I knew he was lying, you know. So I said, no, I'm not moving on. We're going to have to work something out. And you know, Olga has to find a place for us to stay the night because ice was hitting me in the face. The wind is so harsh there. I wish somebody would have said, bring a snowsuit. Bring us, like you're going skiing. Walk around like that. That would have helped. Bring water and a ski suit would have been the best advice I could have ever gotten. And, that was rough. See, I had a lot of challenges because she was just abandoned and there was nobody to sign her off to me. So I had challenges to overcome. But you know,
how does she feel?
A world
of
money.
How does she feel about this? How does she feel about the book and the screenplay? What is that like for her?
Well, you know, I didn't put her real name in there, and as you see, I didn't put her, you know, picture where people could recognize her on the cover. It's all blurred out. And I put a fake name for everybody in there. And she read the book. She read it, funny enough. She read it when I was not around, and I don't know why. Because when she was a few years older, I said, do you want to read the book? Because her friend grabbed the book. I had a few in my room. And her friend really enjoyed it. And she read it when I was not around. And she never brought it up, so I did not either. And I don't tell her that the screenplay is doing so well and could be optioned again. Because the first time Lighthouse Pictures optioned it, you know, then they dropped me after the 7th month. But I thought, yeah, there's an issue, you know. What would my daughter think about that? You know, because so far it's just a book that has been in the family. And mm-hmm. nobody knows who she is from that book. Yes. So I maintained her privacy pretty well.
Yes, and I think that's important. And just like a mother would do. And I think it just speaks volume of who you are as a person and who you are as a mother. And all of that you've gone through to save your daughter.
And not to make her feel like she's somebody different, you know, in New York. I had to change her name so it matched my ex-husband's name. He's Italian. And her name was clearly Russian, Verochka. So I had to Italianize her name. And in the book, I call her Karina. So her privacy is pretty well protected. What would happen if it gets optioned? I would change the title and hope that she would never make the connection.
Yes, yes. Well, we're at the end of the show. How can my listeners follow you, find out any updates, get the book? Where can they find that information?
The book is on Amazon. My Facebook is Bella Wolf, B-E-L-A. Wolf like the animal. My Twitter is Jordan LaPointe and Bella Wolf. And my Instagram is Bella W000.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you back on the show, and I know I'm going to have you on again and again. And it's so incredible to speak with you and have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, too, Alexa. I love your little bunny, and her pictures are adorable. So,
thank you. She's 3.5 years already. She's 3.5 years old.
Oh, my God. Time flies. Wow.
Yes.
She's adorable. So,
Thank you.
I look forward to speaking with you again, too. We'll catch up, see what's new and what happens this year with all these awards.
Yes, I can't wait to hear about it. Thank you so much. And everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Please keep sending in your questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Everyone, have a good night and God bless.
Yes. Good night and God bless.